Blog Talk Radio.
There must be lights burning brighter somewhere. Got to be birds flying higher in a sky more blue. If I can dream of a better land where all my brothers walk hand in hand, tell me why, oh why, oh why can't my dream come true? Oh why? There must be peace and understanding sometime. Strong winds of promise that will blow away all the doubt and fear. If I can dream of a warmer sun where hope keeps shining, oh everyone tell me why, oh why, oh why won't that sun appear?
Good afternoon. Hi, it's Marcia Cook, and it's Good Story is a Good Story, and we have a great show. We have the Boku authors today, and I am one of them, and we're going to have a great show. It's a lot of fun. We have really a very different show than we always have, because I have an 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock show at 9 Eastern, and today we have people from Ireland, and we have people from UK, and we have, well, actually Minnesota and Chicago, so we're all over the map here, okay? We have a great show today, and I'm just going to say a few little things. Okay, let's see what I will talk about today. Okay, but I did talk to Virginia Grenier, who is my partner in World of Ink, and we discussed about advertising, because I think that we decided to do this because now Blog Talk was nice enough to let us put a lot of pictures on. We could only put 4 on before and ads, and so now we can put much more. You know, we don't have the limit that we had. So we're going to be offering advertising for your books a month. It's $50 if you'd like it, and you can contact me or Virginia. And it's a good way because it goes on. It'll go on everybody's show that is from from World of Ink, and it'll be for a month. And a lot of people are on Blog Talk. And Virginia, actually, we were talking about one thing. Our outreach is like 2 million people between Virginia and myself of all the marketing that we do, which, you know, we have to do, and we overdo it because we just do marketing, you know, for everybody, for our shows, our blogs, Twitter, whatever. So, you know, that's a good thing if anybody wants to do that. We just decided to do that because I know now we can. All right, and let's see. All right, our show's tomorrow. Fran Lewis has a great show tomorrow. And let's see who. Well, I think that Virginia has one on Monday, but these are our hosts, Virginia Grenier, Fran Lewis, R. Jeffrey, Willow Cross. She now is with Tracy Ford is her co-host, and Cassandra Dane. And we all have different shows, but my show is kind of like different than everybody else's because I have lots of different kinds of shows. And if you'd like to be on a show or want to talk to us, please feel free to go to World of Ink Network or Michigan Avenue Media and just let us know. Okay, and that's it. And I'm going to introduce our guests, and they can talk a little bit about themselves. They're with Boku Publishing, and Sable Hunter has been on. And if anybody didn't listen to Sable on Willow's show, it's about ghost investigation. It was on Saturday night. It's on World of Ink Network. You can pick it up there. And she was great. It was a great show. They were talking a lot about the ghost investigations. And Sable had a lot of stories to tell. It's very interesting. And Willow's great at that. And Tracy Ford has joined with Willow, and she's co-hosting, and it was a fun show. And I'm always listening there in case they need anything. It's usually on Friday night. It was on Saturday this week. Okay. Now, all right, let's see. I have three people here, which is Mike Ferrisi, Katie Rowland, and we have Isabel. And
Hello, good evening.
Hello, everybody. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Okay.
Hi.
Okay, and this is the thing. If I should drop out of the show for some reason, these three can take over without me, need me at all. Okay. I've talked to them, and they all can handle this. Okay, so we're going to read from their book. They're going to read from their books, and I may do a little excerpt. I'm not sure yet. I always just say I'm going to, and then I never do. And I guess I don't ask myself to do. Somebody else is going to ask me, so I guess it's fine. But we're going to have who wants to go first? All right, Mike, do you want to go first? How about that?
Yeah,
tell everybody
sure.
a little bit
sure.
about you, and we'll read after everybody, you know, after you all say what you do. Mm-hmm. Or I should say, I am Marcia Casper Cook, and I am an author, screenwriter, and I'm an agent, and the radio show host, just so you know who I am. Okay, there we go. I always forget to say who I am. All right. Go
okay.
ahead, Mike.
Hey, Marcia, yeah, I'm Mike Farisee. I write books of no redeeming social value, crime fiction, theoretically with a sense of humor and maybe even a little romance. I'm from Minnesota, but I'm calling in from Dublin, Ireland. I'm over here 6 months out of the year. My wife is Irish, so that is why I'm over here. And when I finish my list of chores, I suddenly find myself in the Dublin airport with my suitcase heading back to Minnesota. So my crime fiction, I write a number of standalone books and a series featuring a private investigator named Dev Haskell and Write What You Know. So Dev is situated in my hometown, St. Paul, Minnesota. And this is chapter one from my last release, which is entitled Last Shot, and this book was released in November of 2013, and this is chapter one. Annie was a petite blonde with large brown eyes who stood barely an inch over 5 feet. We casually linked up from time to time over the past couple of months. Up until now, all of our meetings had been spur of the moment, meaning she called and I suggested maybe she could come right over to chat. Tonight's chat was different. For the first time, she invited me over to her place. We feasted on undercooked spaghetti with little cut-up bits of hot dog floundering in a runny ketchup sauce. Apparently, the kitchen wasn't her strong suit, so the bottles of wine I showed up with helped us survive her lack of gourmet skills. It was drizzling softly outside when we finally took a break. Annie, lying next to me with one of her gorgeous, shapely legs draped over mine, was tracing four-letter words and triple X suggestions across my chest with her fingertip, giggling. We'd been frolicking in her candle-lit bedroom for a couple of hours, a room I'd never been in before. During our break, I was beginning to check the place out. The walls were painted a dinged-up off-white. A large oak double chest of drawers with a matching mirror that covered most of the wall was wedged in next to the door. About four dozen Mardi Gras-style beaded necklaces hung from either side of the mirror. A small dresser, once painted olive drab, now chipped and scratched, stood at the end of the queen-size bed. A flat-screen TV on top of the dresser and half-covered one of the bedroom windows. It all made for tight quarters, and I had to turn sideways just to squeeze around the end of her bed. 6-foot mirrors on the bifold closet doors reflected our images as we lay in bed. Next to the closet, the clear imprint of a heavy-treaded boot, about 10 sizes larger than Annie's demure little feet, was stamped on the wall. "Did you play a lot of sports in school?" I asked. "No, not at all. I was a pretty geeky kid. About the only thing I played was the clarinet in the school band, and I didn't do that very well." "Then where'd you get all the trophies? Must be a couple dozen up here. Looks like you're into ballet or dance or something. What about all those medals and ribbons in the two cases on the wall? Are they from your school band?" "Oh, all that junk belongs to Lydell." "Lydell? He's my boyfriend. Well, until I broke up with him." "And he left all this stuff here?" "Well, I only sent him the text last night." "The text?" I asked and rolled over to face her. "Yeah, telling him we were through. I really didn't feel like talking with him. He gets so dramatic, and he's kind of got a temper." "You didn't tell him in person?" I was getting a warning sign flashing inside my thick skull. "How could I, Dev? He's out of town," she said, suddenly rising up and looking down at me. "Out of town. You mean like just across the river in Minneapolis or like way far away out of town? I sat up to face her. Relax. He's in Chicago, she said, bouncing her surgically enhanced chest from side to side. I completely forgot what I was going to ask next. He's such a big baby. Chicago? Yeah, that stupid UFC. UFC? Is that where he goes to school? No, dopey, she said, then pushed me down. She straddled me and began to lightly run her nails down my stomach, smiling in a leering way. It's his crazy obsession, baby, that idiotic Ultimate Fight Club. God, I'm so sick of it. He trains all day long, lifting his big, dumb weights and drinking all those smelly old protein drinks. 5 days a week, he spends at least an hour in a cage sparring with some other obsessed animal. Sparring in a cage? Yeah. Oh, my God. Her iPhone rang at that minute, and she reached over to grab it off the top of the double-chested drawers. Can you believe it? Go figure. What is it? I asked. Hello, Lydell. I attempted to sit up, but she pushed me down again. Shh, she said, signaling with her index finger to be quiet. So, you got my text message. I could feel my heart beginning to pound. But then again, he wasn't Chicago. No, we've talked about all this before. No, I don't care. This time I really mean it. I wasn't sure she should be sitting on top of me during this conversation. What? She said. You did? When? Whatever it was, Lydell had her attention. I was guessing a tattoo with Annie emblazoned across his heart. No, Lydell, this time I'm not kidding, she said, sounding like she really meant it. I was thinking maybe some of the passion and romance in the air just a moment ago was beginning to dissipate. Fine, go ahead. So what? Oh, really? Is that supposed to be a threat, Lydell? Uh-oh. I don't care if you are parked out front. Besides, this just isn't a very good time for me. Out front? Well, you should have called me first. Not what I wanted to hear. Don't you talk to me like that. It's really none of your business. Alarm bells were sounding in my head. Well, just go ahead and try. See if I care. Anyway, I had the locks changed. Not good. Don't you dare. You kick that door in and you're going to pay for it. I'm warning you, mister. I took this last line as my walking papers. I rolled out from underneath her just as a loud boom sounded downstairs. Oh, God, I just hate it when he goes crazy like this. He gets so worked up, he's liable to do anything. You probably should leave, Deb, she said, then slid off the bed and tossed her phone onto the pillow. I heard wood splintering in the doorframe downstairs. Uh-oh. Might be better if you just went out the window. She made it sound like it wasn't the first time someone had fled by that route. Annie, damn it! A voice roared from downstairs. Better hurry, she half-whispered, then sort of motioned me away with her hands before she peeked into the hallway. I raised the window and stared into the wet night. God, it was at least a story and a half drop. There was some sort of large bush down there spreading out below the window. A light flashed on in the house next door, and I could see a little high school girl filling a glass of water at the kitchen sink. Annie, where the hell are you? Lydell roared. It sounded like he was stomping through the dining room, making his way into the kitchen. You going to be okay? I asked. Don't worry. He gets like this every once in a while. Soon as he sees me with my clothes off, he'll calm down and get all apologetic. But you better go, she whispered and nodded toward the open window. Annie! He screamed as he stomped back into the dining room. I figured a 911 call wouldn't get the police here fast enough. What the hell? Just a story and a half. I was out the window, hanging from the sill, dropping. Ouch! Snap, crackle, and pop. I sort of landed on my feet and tried to do the old crouch, tuck, and roll, just like I'd learned in the Army. But I'd never done it naked before. And then there was that damn bush. I heard something break as I tumbled into the mud. Fortunately, it was a branch on the bush. I didn't care to contemplate a misplaced limb. I barely landed when my jeans and T-shirt flew out the window. One of my shoes sailed out next, then the other, hastily wildly tossed, landed on the back porch of the roof next door. The high school girl at the kitchen sink stared at me wide-eyed as I picked up my T-shirt. She looked up toward the ceiling when my shoe thumped across her roof, but I really couldn't worry about that just now. I was more concerned about that ultimate Fight Clubber Lydell flying out the window after me. I coun't find my boxers, and I didn't have the luxury of time to search. I pulled my T-shirt on over the mud and scratches, then quickly stepped into my jeans, zipping them on the run. I only had one shoe. Fortunately, my wallet and car keys were still in my jeans. I limped across the backyard and out to the alley so I could circle the block. The high school girl had moved from the kitchen window to her back door and watched me as I disappeared from view under the alley light. Luckily, I parked across the street and down a couple of doors. A bright red pickup truck had skidded to a stop after barreling 15 feet the hedge into Annie's front yard. The thing had dual rear wheels and an Ultimate Fight Club bumper sticker that said, "Go ahead, take your best shot." The driver's door was still open with some country chorus blaring "Death Before Dishonor." Pretty safe guess the vehicle belonged to recently returned Lydell. As I drove past, I could see the back of a broad-shouldered, muscular guy with a shaved head standing in Annie's front entry. His head looked like a shiny globe and appeared to be hanging in abject surrender on his muscle-bound body. He was nodding slightly, and it looked like he had already been reduced to the apologetic mode. I could just see Annie from the knees down, standing halfway up the stairs. Hopefully, she'd make him sleep on the floor next to her ruined front door. I drove home scratched, muddied, but still alive. There you go.
That's very good. Great. You know, that's very good. It's such a different kind of story. That's really very interesting to hear that. You know, and because, you know, having talked to you just once before, but I'm hearing you talk, it's just like how you would tell a story. So that's very good. How many pages is that book?
I think it's about 230.
Yeah. And all your books go that way, the same in that style, right?
Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah.
It's very, very entertaining. We're all sitting here. We're not in the same room, but I hear everybody else. We're all there. All right, you know, actually, all right, so then we're going to have, okay, then we'll have Caddy, and then we'll have Isabel, and then we'll all talk about everything. Okay, Caddy,
okay.
Go ahead. Okay, really fun. Go ahead.
Okay, hi, I'm Caddy Rowland, and I write novels that showcase the sublime joy and bitter tragedy of being human. I was an indie author for 2 years and then joined Buku this fall. And before joining Buku, I had out of five, and it's still out, a five-book series called the Gastion series, which is historical fiction, family saga, drama, and the last two books are also gay fiction. Now with Buku, I'm doing a continuing saga that is dramatic suspense and contemporary fiction, and a gay teenage boy shares main character status with a teenage girl starting in book two. A little bit about me personally, I love to write, but I live to paint. I'm also an artist. And so if I'm not typing on my keyboard, I'm probably downstairs making love to the color, as I call it.
and you're having a party. They're having you want to just give your link so they could get the so they could maybe plan to go to your party today that you're having.
That would be great. I'm having a party right at 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock Central Standard Time. You'll find the link if you go to Facebook to my author page, which is www.facebook.com/author Caddy Rowland. And
okay,
when you
so
go to
right
that page, you'll
so
see
it's after
link.
That. It'll be after shortly after this, but it's from Boku. Is it a Boku party, right?
It is a Boku party, and there's
party.
Going to be several authors there. Not all of the Boku parties authors, and they're going to be giving away books. There's going to be gift cards given away, so you can win my books. You can win other authors' books.
Oh, that's
we're going
fun.
To play game. We're just going to party on down.
Okie dokie.
My current saga, my books are always dramatic, and I write raw, gritty, and real. I like to make people think and feel, and I like to show them that most things in life, although we like to think of them as either black or white, are usually shades of gray.
Yeah.
And by this the time true. Someone's read one of my books, I hope that they can see why people make decisions that the reader would have said at the beginning of the book should never be made.
Yeah.
Until you've walked in someone else's shoes, you know.
It just happens, right. Yeah, life. Yeah.
This new saga of mine is a dark subject. It's a subject about human trafficking, most specifically about teenagers that are abducted into prostitution.
It is a big topic. It is. I've had a show on with the younger children. Yeah, it is.
Okay, yeah. It's a continuing saga of revenge and redemption. And in the first book, Phoenix, a 16-year-old girl, runs away from an abusive father, only to find herself trafficked into prostitution. She's taken to New Orleans, and a wealthy man named Antoine has won an illegal brothel located in that city during a card game. He's planning on reopening it as a whorehouse for the rich and powerful. Phoenix is the first girl to arrive, and the first time she meets Antoine, she vows that she'll find a way to destroy him, his house of prostitution, and the men who use underage girls for their selfish pleasures. She figures out she needs to first gain his trust. And she does this over the first several weeks by convincing him that she enjoys sex with him. And as he gets more emotionally attached to her, he slowly gives her more freedom. The excerpt that I'm going to read takes place several weeks after she's arrived. Antoine has never needed to work, and he's been in no hurry to open the brothel, and he's simply been enjoying the use of Phoenix as his own, convincing himself it's just until he tires of her. After another week, Antoine was so happy with the turnaround in Phoenix, he decided to give her more freedom. Not much, but at least she would no longer be confined to one room. Phoenix, as you know, you're the first one here. I'm starting from scratch with this business. Since it will be a while before we open, I've decided to give you free roam of the house. You've come a long way in regard to your becoming an asset, and so I'm rewarding you. Seeing her look of excitement, he continued, I want you to understand this. If you attempt to escape, there will be no mercy. You'll be beaten within an inch of your life and put to work immediately. I don't care if we're not officially open. There are always men who will pay for sex. Of course, said Phoenix. The excitement was gone from her face. Anyway, there's nowhere for you to go, as you have no money and no ID. You would do much worse on the street than inside of these walls. Do you understand me? Unfortunately, he was right. She had no alternatives, and she knew it. Who was she going to call, even if she did get some money? Her father? Bad chance. Her brother? He had left college after the first 6 months and hadn't been heard from since. No, she was going to play the hand she had been dealt right here at this hateful house. She was going to play it and make sure it was a winning hand, even if she had to grab the deck and learn to deal from the bottom. Nodding at him, she replied, I'm no dummy, Antoine. I know I'm better off here. Besides, even though I hate myself for it, I'm beginning to enjoy sex with you. I must be sick to be drawn to someone who brought me here to use me as a whore. But the fact remains I am. I won't say you can trust me, as I know when someone says that the opposite is usually true. But I will say I won't be leaving. I like having food, a bath, and a bed. She gave him a small smile. He put out another cigarette and stood, reaching for her hand. Very well. I think we understand each other. Let's take a tour of the house. As they toured the house, Phoenix barely paid attention to what the rooms looked like. There would be time to explore later. Instead, she simply made sure to pay attention to little things about her captor. So, he trusted her enough to give a run of the house. Another score for her. Now she must do everything in her power to keep his trust. It shouldn't be hard. He was easily flattered. She noticed he took out the flask and drank from it a couple of times while they walked through the house. He drank from it every time she was with him. Right now, she didn't know how it could be used to her advantage, but there had to be some way. After he had shown her every room in the house, Antoine gave her a greasy smile. Come, let's continue your lessons. Phoenix flinched. Now? and Juan ran his finger up her arm. I'm in the mood. How about if I show you something else I like? She reached out and touched his cheek. Show me, Antoine. Show me everything I need to know to please you. In her mind, she continued, show me, you bastard. Show me your likes and dislikes, your strengths and your weaknesses. Show me your dreams and show me your heart. Show me so I can crush all of them. Show me. She followed him back up the stairs. And that's it.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Very powerful.
Very, very.
Well done,
Caddy.
Yes, very powerful.
Thank you. Okay, yeah, that's the truth. All right, we'll talk about that in a few minutes. All right, okay, Isabel, your turn.
Hello, it's Isabel here from Manchester. My name is Isabel Kate, and I'm really an erotic paranormal author, but I've gone into historical fiction. And what I'm going to read now is an excerpt from Lacan. It's my first historical fiction novel under Boku as well. And just as part of the blurb, it's set in the Philippines, in the south of the Philippines, in the bigger island called Luzon. And it's in 1607. The Spanish have landed on the shores of the Philippines to pacify the natives, convert them to Christianity, and mine the islands for its gold. Headstrong and loyal Lacam, a Babaylan, refuses to submit to Spanish imperial authority and convert to Christianity. With her village destroyed and her people killed, she seeks refuge in the cave of rituals in the jungle vastness of the sacred mountains, but she is caught, raped, and tortured. On the eve of her execution, she regains her freedom with the help of her jailer, Joaquin Santiago, who refuses to see her killed. Now a remontada, Lacam realizes the old ways will cease to exist unless she finds a way for it to continue in the ruined ashes of the world she knows. So this is the excerpt that I'm going to read, and this is already after the skirmish between and among the Spanish soldiers, because they've found the Cave of Rituals, and that cave has a lot of gold in it. So this is what happens afterwards. Joaquin covered his nose and mouth with his shirt and continued walking. Gradually, the stench subsided. In its place was the scent of incense and fragrant flowers. As he moved away from the tropical foliage, he saw Lacam standing before a funeral mound. She was chanting with her hands raised in a gesture of offering. Soot smudged her face and blackened her hands. Tears fell unchecked onto her vest. When the chanting ceased, Lacam let her hands fall to her sides before she walked toward the lake shore. On and on she went, the wind rustling her tresses, lifting them from her shoulders. The water lapped at her feet, then her calves, thighs, waist. The farther she went, the slower she walked, moving with the undulation of the waves. Alto! Joaquin sprinted after her, his bare feet digging in the sand, losing balance soon after. Lacam was already neck deep in water. He stood up, ran and shouted at Lacam before splashing into the water and swimming toward her. Lacam, no, India, por favor. Joaquin grabbed Lacam by the waist, pulling her back to shore. Lacam screeched, clawing at the arm around her waist like a band of steel. She screamed and sputtered when waves overwhelmed them, but Joaquin did not let go. She twisted in his arm and started scratching his face. He roared with pain, completely forgetting the gash on his cheek and the water stung. He blinked the water from his eyes, resolutely heading for shallower waters. With one last effort, he lifted Lacam and threw her down on the shore. Blood trickled down his cheek and into his mouth. He fell into the ground, spitting the blood out. Lacam was on her feet, panting, her body taut with anger, ready to pounce on Joaquin if he even as much as approached her. Her clothes clung to every inch of her body like second skin, water cascading down her arms and legs. I can understand your grief, India, Joaquin said harshly, but that is not a reason to take your own life. It is a sin before God to do so. He tentatively touched the wound on his cheek, wincing at the pain. He felt the wound on his side. No pain there. I was not about to kill myself, she said, still breathless and furious. I was going to cleanse myself. She walked toward him, her face flushed with indignation. That is the only thing you white men know, isn't it? She fumed. Take forcefully what does not belong to you and dismiss as barbaric what you do not know. Yes, and we are all the worse for it, Joaquin said grimly. His acceptance of what she said mystified her that she stopped her tirade. The fight drained out of her. Lacan nudged her chin. Your face is bleeding again. I would not be bleeding if you didn't scratch my face. If you just left me alone, I would not have. After what you went through, it would not be surprising if you decided to take your life, but taking one's life is against God's commandments. God, you speak of your God again. I will not worship your God. I am not asking you to, Joaquin bit out. Lacan was silent, her chest heaving with anger. It is against what I believe in, Joaquin said, but it is not against what you believe in to rape our women, make us slaves, and covet our wealth. Rape, Joaquin gave a scoffing laugh. No, you do not have to be Jesucristo's follower to do that. Slaves and wealth? I am sure you kept slaves and took the wealth of your enemies. We do not keep slaves, Lacan said. Those who serve us are free. Joaquin approached Lacan, looking deeply into her eyes. Water trickled down his face, his white shirt plastered across his chest, and the blood from his cut making watery red spots on the cloth. Look at what is happening around you, Babaylan. He swept his arm in a wide arc. We are conquering the islands one by one. What will you be when we have completed the task for Cristo and El Rey? I will be dead, Lacan replied flatly, turning away. Suddenly, Joaquin's nearness disturbed her, and she couldn't understand why. She hurled over her shoulder, although you or your kind shall never conquer us completely. Nunca. She pushed her way back to the water. Then she made one last parting shot. I fed the bodies of your kind to the crocodiles in the lake. It is desecration enough for their blood to water the ground of my ancestors. The beasts will hurry them to the gates of the underworld. Lacan did not see the shock on Joaquin's face. That's it.
Well, that certainly takes a lot of research to do that type of book. Oof.
Great, Isabel. Great.
Yeah. Well, all I can say is if Sable's listening, you've got very good authors. I'll tell you that. No, it's very interesting, though, but to hear everybody, you know, because I think that everybody, you know, you come on a show and you talk about it, but when you actually hear how people write, I really think that's a good thing, you know, because it just shows, and all three of you are completely different writers. So it's very interesting.
Isabel, don't you find that with historical fiction, I know I found that it took twice as long to do the research as any of the writing.
Yes, yeah. We need to, you know, get more research into it because, see, you know, there's a debate here in the UK among historical fiction writers, and their question is basically how much of history can you use in historical fiction? How much is it that, how much can you bend it to fit your story? And there are two sides to it. They say that because it's historical fiction, then obviously you have the artistic license to bend it to how you want it to happen. But then there are also other writers who want historical fiction to also include a lot of the truth that's happened in a particular place's history. So, it's
but
quite
it does depend on the author,
well.
Though. Doesn't it really depend on the author? I mean, how you feel about it, you know, is your characters.
Yes, that's correct.
To a certain extent, but boy, they expect, for instance, if you're writing in the 16th century or the 19th century, they expect the clothing to be right. They expect, you know, people not to be using things that didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I've heard of people giving a one star because people put the wrong buttons on a blouse.
However, you know, we talk about reviews a lot of times, you know, on our shows, you know, because, you know, as we all know, Amazon, you know, years ago, a reviewer was a reviewer, but now a reviewer is a person that might have read the book or might not have read the book. And just maybe skim through it. So you don't really know now. So, I mean, I just hope people don't take, you know, I mean, it's very nice to get a 5, but it's really okay to get a 1, 2, 3, or 4, because you don't even know if they read it. So don't feel bad if people get one or two.
Yeah, the funny thing about it is that those people, I think, who haven't read it, think that they've already absorbed it by osmosis, maybe when you look at it on Amazon.
That might be a way to look at it, right? But, you know, it is true because, you know, you never know. Amazon has a lot of rules, and they have some rules that are, you know, I mean, it's very difficult to control this market because it's up for grabs right now, I think.
And it's changing constantly.
Yeah.
Constantly.
It is, yes.
Does anybody have any questions to ask each other? Feel free to do that. I don't have to be the captain. I'm fine. Okay, everybody, if you have something you want to ask.
Because both of you are writing items that, you know, it's fiction, but I don't want to say limited, but certainly held in the confines of what's appropriate, like you said, Caddy, for the time frame you're covering. Do you work off of outlines?
I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't write outlines.
No, I don't either. I'm like Caddy. I'm the seat of my pants writer. Yeah.
I am too.
So here we got four out of four. It's a pretty good. You know, it's really interesting. Right? It's, you know, it is true though. The more I do the shows, I mean, I didn't realize how many people write that way because, you know, we all want to have fun when we're writing too. So while we're writing, it's so much fun. I'm sure that you all agree that when you figure something out, you go, "Oh yes," so, you know, it's like really exciting, you know. And only an author will understand that. You go like, "Oh, this matches. This is good. It fits," you know.
Well,
and
especially if you've fretted over it for a while, and it's, you know, you've maybe tried a couple of things, this just isn't working, and all of a sudden it clicks, and you go, fantastic.
I know, it's true.
No, at the end of any given day, no one is more surprised than me as to what's happened in the book.
I am too.
You know?
I am too.
Isn't it fun when a character just shows up out of the blue? I mean, you had no idea the character was going to be in the book.
I love it.
That's true.
My favorite characters in my work show up that way. You know,
I do think it's great because, I mean, this is what imagination, you know, I think what happens is sometimes people don't realize this is fiction. I actually did a Holocaust survivor story, and that is based on the woman's story. There's everything that she told me is in that book. And when she goes to speak at the Holocaust Museum, she's in her 80s already, and she says the same story. But, you know, and it is what she says. Everything was as she says it. It's like I almost did I did do everything she said, and I didn't make anything up, except there was like one little word I put in. But other than that, everything was real in her eyes. And that's like a whole debate, you know, if it's true, if it's not true, when you say based on, like hers is based on her story and told by her. So, but there's so many different, you know, views that you can do when even in a, you know, historical fiction, you know, it's just fiction.
I think that's a really good point, Marcia. And, you know, what happened to me with historical fiction is I was writing about Bohemian artists during the whole era when art changed dramatically. And they were very much nonconformist avant-garde people. So at the beginning of my book, I put that I was going to use words that were a little more modern.
Right.
To show that they were more forward-thinking.
That's a good idea.
And yet I didn't use contractions for the first two books because they spoke more formally.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And still, every once in a while, someone will say, you know, it was too modern for the time, or the word you used the word gig, and that bothered me. Actually, the word gig did exist before that era, but most people don't realize that, you know. And so you don't get into arguments about it, but it's just funny how some people are so by the book and think that they know every word and, you know, for every century. And it's a tough one, Isabel.
It's a very tough. I've had people say, you know, and her story is the truth. I happen to know her family. I've met them. And, you know, and I have had people that have written a review, and they say that they don't like what she did. She should have done something different. And the thing is, this is her story. This is true. I mean, it happened. You know, you can't change. I mean, that was really true. One of them, they said, we didn't like that she didn't bring her daughter she had a first marriage to her daughter. She didn't bring her daughter to her second wedding. I mean, that was her choice, and that was real. And somebody said, not like she made it up, and they wanted to change it. It's somebody's life. And I do think what happens on Amazon, people say things, but they're not really thinking. I mean, this is her story. It's not fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you can't change that she brought her daughter to the wedding. She didn't, you know. And this woman was very upset. You're like, well, I don't want me to, you know, what can you say then? You know, because it's true. So that's, you know, that's why people have to be very cautious about when they get upset. And this is what I feel like my job is. I've done this for like 15 to 20 years. Don't listen to everything. You know, I mean, you can't. It'll really stop you from writing if you really listen to everybody and you don't know. Just do the best you can when you write a book, and that's that.
Yep.
Yep, that's true. And sometimes I don't anymore even look at the reviews because at the end of the day, it's just really their opinion.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're planning a day wherein you want to write during the day and you don't want anything to disturb your train of thought, it's better not to, you know, not to listen or not even to read the reviews that you might get for the you know, for the books that you've written. Yeah,
it's probably better not to even go on Facebook or anything on those days because
I know, Marcia,
because you can go on anybody that has a lot of reviews and see such conflicting opinions.
Yeah.
You know, someone was talking about that on a board that a chat room. And I said, you know, you can't worry about it unless you have an overwhelming majority all saying the same thing.
Yeah.
I said, I had one reviewer say my writing is like poetry.
That's
another
good.
Another one said it read like a horny teenage boy. And I
oh, great. Well, that's not good. We don't
you know,
like
another
that.
One said I'd buy this book for the writing alone. The next one said the writing's boring.
Yes.
So you can't win.
Yeah, right. You can't. Mike was going to add something, I think. Mike, what were you going
to
say?
Well, I was just, you know, sort of to paraphrase what Caddy just said, I get a lot of emails from people who read my stuff, and I have to be honest, I started out writing with sort of grumpy old guys like me in mind, and all the responses I get, I mean, well, maybe not all, but 99.9% of them are from women, and I had two women refer to one of my books, and they literally listed the scene, you know, they were probably four or five pages apart from one another. One says, 135 pages, I'm just not sure with all the sex in this book. And another woman writes, I'm almost to 150 pages, and this is all the sex I get? And
I
thought at that point, I'm right in the middle. I guess that's where I should be. Perfect. You know, it's just,
see, you know, but see,
that's
the
all
thing.
You can do.
You know, nobody knows. Like, that's certainly the question with erotic and romance. We go through this on a lot of shows. And I keep looking up for my own self. I keep going like, is this erotic or is it erotic? You know, is it not erotic? Is it erotic? Is it erotic romance? I mean, it, because you can't get it always in the genre that it is. But then if somebody else writes a drama type that's a best-selling fiction, let's just say, and they put sex scenes in it, that's not called erotic. That's just called a book. You know what I mean? And then it's weird and it's very, very difficult. And you know, I think this is one of the problems why some people don't sell their books. It's in the wrong genre, and they can't get it out of it because they don't, you know, now it's being, I think like 2 years ago even, it was you could put yourself in certain keywords that said what genre. Well, you can't do that now. So I think the readers are probably confused.
And I think those genres are going to change even more. I mean,
yes.
Up until recently, who would have got? I still tell people, you know, just friends of mine. I know someone, and she writes cowboy erotica, and they what? I mean, they have no clue or vampire romance. I mean, hello. And it's going to be filtered down to even smaller subgroups as time goes on.
Right.
I mean, I think that's the future.
It is, and you know, I do have a lot of shows about, you know, and I have like horror writers come on that have dark, deep fiction, and because people, I learned when I was doing this for the last, when I started doing this 4 years ago, people were going, I will not read horror stories. Oh, I will not do erotica. Oh, I will not do this. I will not do that. Well, then came, you know, 50 Shades of Grey.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? Everybody and their brother read it. So, I mean, so there has to be people that are reading these things.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
I mean, and it's just like nobody's saying what they are. And I don't, that's why, because everything is labeled so much.
Well, and sometimes a book covers so many genres. I mean, how do you pick when you have a series that's drama, literary
yep.
fiction, family saga, psychological,
yep.
gay fiction, and historical fiction. And you can only pick two.
Right. It's very hard.
Yeah. Excellent
yeah.
point.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you don't really – it is true. Like, well, I do screenplays, and that to me is, in my mind, easier. You go, okay, it's a romantic comedy. Or it's, you know, a horror story, or otherwise it's a fiction, you know, it's a, you know, nonfiction story, or if it's, you know, but, you know, you get in the genre, drama, adventure, whatever it is, and it's easier, but in books, it's very difficult now because they, you know, people just, you know, they say no to things that they probably would like. And that's what
yeah.
I try to do is put everybody on, and that's why now when I... With the erotic, I've had several shows like that, and you know, showing people that they're regular books by regular mothers, fathers, whatever, you know, whoever writes
mm-hmm.
them, they're PTA people.
Mm-hmm.
They're not just people that you wouldn't talk to. They're everyday people
mm-hmm.
that are writing these. You know, they just have
and
different names.
We're so restricted at times by Amazon. For instance, contemporary fiction.
Yeah.
If you pick contemporary fiction, they
that's
put
hard.
It into contemporary women.
Yeah.
What if it's not women's fiction?
I know.
If you pick saga, it shows up as family saga.
I know. So, I mean, there is
and
no,
now you also
no...
have new adults.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's, yeah, that just popped up.
You have
on
young
the
adults
recently.
And new adults.
Yeah. And nobody
mm-hmm.
really knows what to do with that because you don't know how far you can go with that because,
yeah.
you don't know, it depends what age. And, you know, let's just face it, all these kids are watching cable and, you know, this is nothing to them. It really isn't.
Right.
It's, and their parents go, oh, they don't want them to read it. But you know what? They're watching all these movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They don't
mm-hmm.
even know they're watching the movies.
And mm-hmm. what kills me is it's okay for these kids to watch people getting cut up and blown up and eaten and everything else, but it's not okay to see two people make love.
I know. It is a very strange
thought. You know, that's American media. You can put a pistol in someone's face and pull the trigger on primetime TV, but you wouldn't want to show a woman breastfeeding. I mean, you know, it's we're our own worst enemies.
I think one of the good things about Blog Talk Radio is, you know, there's like thousands of shows on, and you know, you can hear movie stars, you can hear soap opera stars, you can hear comedians, and you know, it's so interesting that everybody, you know. It's not what people think. So, I mean, you have to sometimes, like, get something and read it or talk or listen to a show or whatever, and you could learn something. And it's really good. The authors that are on a lot of shows, I've learned so much in the last, I mean, I've done this for 20 years, but I have learned a lot since I've been doing shows because I'm always taking notes or listening to what people say because sometimes you go like, oh, this is a great idea that somebody didn't think of before, you know, or didn't know about. And so I think that that's a good thing for people to do because when they're listening to shows like this, let's just say, you know, I mean, erotic, whatever. I mean, there's sex in a lot of movies, there's sex in books, so they shouldn't, you know, just say I won't read it. Just try it.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Well, and to maybe take it a step further, as a writer, and Isabel is a perfect example of this, and Caddy too, Isabel and I, this is the first time we've ever spoken. We've communicated on social
Facebook.
Media before, but on Facebook, Isabel has given me some great ideas about why don't you try this or here, this will help you, that type of stuff. There's so many people out there like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the type of thing of, geez, I have this idea and I'm not going to let anyone know because I want to get ahead. It's not like that at all.
No, at
all.
No.
Constantly amazes me.
Yeah, it's great. It really is good because people really are,
and
you know.
It's a very nice place, you know, to get a lot of people's help, a lot of people's advice. And everybody really just wants to help each other make it. Here in, you know, in the writing industry.
I think they do.
Yeah.
I really do believe that, you know, and I think that, you know, some people get caught up on Facebook and, you know, Facebook for sure, you know, getting in arguments with each other, which I cannot figure out. I mean, you know, it's really difficult to argue with someone that you're not even knowing who they are, you know, but they are arguing, you know, and I have found myself, like, because I won't write some things on Facebook, I'll, like, email in private message or I'll call them and say, like, just, are you okay? Because it's, you know, you feel bad because, you know, and then I know for sure I feel horrible that some people stop writing when they should not stop writing. And, you know, they're stopping writing because they're feeling like, oh, I'm not selling enough books, and, you know, everybody's selling more books. And, I mean, I'm like everybody else. You know, I'm thinking, oh, how are they doing this? I'm thinking, like, my God, it takes me a long time. One page takes me forever because I have to keep going back and say, I hate this, and I got to put this in. And I don't know how they keep pumping it out so fast, but some people do. But, I mean, there are a lot of different techniques out there. And we all fit somewhere, you know. I'm not sure where I fit. I can't really figure that out yet. I'm working on it because I do children's. I do, you know. I don't think I'll probably do nonfiction again. But you know, unless I get a story that I would want to do. But you know, and I do screenplays. It is very hard when you do a lot of genres though, because you don't fit. Like I really don't fit. That's what happens. I don't fit in a pattern. You know,
yeah, I would find that very difficult to switch genres. I mean, really, really tough.
It is. You know, like Sable is taking my children's book. Right.
You know, Marcia, I wrote a children's book before I wrote any of the books that I have out now, so I hear you about children's books.
Yeah,
how
and
do
I just
market
did, right,
those?
Right. I did the four, yeah, I have four children's books, and you know, Sable's, we're republishing them with Boku. We're going to do it, you know, and they're books that have been successful in the schools, right, but I did write an erotic book, but in my opinion, I don't think I'm ever going to get to the level that I need to. I have done it several times. My characters will swear and they do things, but sometimes you have to have that certain knack that you really get into a certain market. So I'm working on because I'm redoing some things because I'm not sure, you know, and I think there's a lot of people out there don't know if they're erotic writers or if they can just write erotic scenes or it's just, you know, sensual. And I think that with Boku, when they were on one of my shows, when Sable was on talking about the sweeter version of a erotic book, I think that's the best idea I have heard in all these years of doing shows, because if there's a sweeter version of the same story, then that you won't get the people not reading it because they don't want the words. So I think it's a great idea. So Sable is putting those out now, and that's a beautiful idea.
That's fairly recent. I don't know that she's gotten any real hardcore, you know, I wish her the best on that. I think she's, that's the beauty of electronic publishing, too. You can do that.
Yeah.
You know, what you just described 6, 7, 8 years ago would have taken her 4 or 5 years to do.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and it's very interesting how that is coming about, because it is a very tough thing to know how far you can go and why you can't go there. And I was actually looking up some things. I'm always looking up some things. And, you know, years ago they had those old the magazines that were True Confession. That is still out. And they are still out. It was unbelievable. I did not. And, yeah, uh-huh. And so years ago they had those things they didn't have any erotic, but they had plenty of tough subjects that they talked about in those years. You know, so I think that, you know, things have changed, you know, and TV has changed it, and cable certainly. But I think with books, I think people are having a hard time fitting somewhere. And not, like, I know somebody that came to me and they said it's historic fiction. And then at that time I hadn't seen the book or anything, and what he was telling me, because it was about Vietnam and, you know, he was a vet, and I'm thinking, I don't think that is historical. And I sent it to reviewers, and they don't think it is either. It could be.
It has to be 50 years past. And
is it 50 years past? Is it 50 years to be historical?
It's 50 years, but then some people also say, or that it had to happen before the author was alive.
Oh,
I
don't really know that answer to that, because I, you know, the thing is, when I think of historical fiction, I do think of what, you know, you were just reading, Isabel. Do you know what I mean? That's what I think is historical fiction to me. And I think that if you put yourself in that market and you're not in that market, your reader, it's just not going to be right, I think. I've done this a long time. It just doesn't seem to fit for what people would say is historical, because it, I don't know. This is going to be a problem now because you're saying 50 years. So how many years is it for Vietnam? I don't know how many years that is.
Yeah, no, it ended after I got married. So it hasn't been. I haven't been married 50 years.
Okay, so all right. So it's probably less than that.
It's almost, it's almost 40 years 70s. We were out of there. Yeah,
73. You're in this. You just did this right now. So what are you? What are you thinking then for you? How do you feel like what years? How do you feel about that?
I'd say
Isabel just wrote one, so I'm just wondering what she's thinking about.
Oh, right. Me.
You did paranormal,
Well, in terms of historical, I'm inclined to agree that it has to be more than 50 years.
I think that's a good way.
I'm a history major. I took up history in university, and we would consider historical something before the 20th century or,
okay.
you know, 19th or 17th or 18th century. So
okay.
that is what I'd think historical. I wanted to ask, you know, about the book, you know, about Vietnam. Was he also a Vietnam vet?
Yes. Yeah.
Right. And it looks like it's probably something like a memoir, which he decided to make.
No, it's not a memoir. No, it's an adventure.
No,
mystery,
I know it's not a memoir,
whatever.
But because of his experiences.
Yeah. I think he'll be,
he
right. But I think it's
going
to be, right. And I said to him that, right, his bio and everything should be with that, you know, so people will get that he was, you know.
Yeah.
Because usually when people are writing about a time, you know, that they were involved in, because they were there, and it makes it all that much more authentic, I think.
Yeah, it becomes something like contemporary. I think it would go into a subgenre of contemporary fiction then.
Contemporary.
Because, I mean, I think it would
such
be
such a hard thing. That, like, Katie, you were saying that contemporary, it's tough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See, Mike, you've got a good one there. You've got your own category, so you know where you're going. When you think about it, you know, it is what people, you know, try to define. But that's why people have a lot of different names. Also,
in the crime fiction thing, I mean, they sort of dodge that by doing a crime fiction noir type of piece. I did one under a pseudonym for a guy. The guy's name is Paul Bishop. And he has a series of novellas.
Yeah, I know who that is. I know who that is.
Great
know.
Guy. About 120 pages, 110 pages. And they're all boxing things set in the 1950s and late 40s. And he gives you a scenario. Your main character has to have come out of St. Vincent's Home for Boys in Chicago. He has to have learned the lessons of life from Father Tim teaching him how to box, and it's 1950. Go with it, and that's the scenario. And my guy is a GI during the Berlin airlift, and then actually comes to Ireland to find his family fortune that he knows is waiting for him. And of course, things go terribly wrong, but. That boxing noir or even a crime fiction noir is kind of the way, at least in my genre, people can dodge around that stuff. You know, it just...
It is. And in my screenplays, I write, you know, romantic comedies, drama. I've written a horror film, in that market, sometimes people do switch around. But in the book market, it's hard. You know, I came out with another name when I did my erotic story about Virginia Templeton, and then I went back because it was hard for me because if I went on a show or talked, I mean, I'm on a show, so it's kind of difficult to be somebody else, you know, than I was. So I went back to my name, and then I thought, oh, maybe I shouldn't have, you know. It's hard because a lot of people do have. I had one show where I had all five guests with different names, and I was like, and I know them, and I'm trying not to call their name because they go under another name.
Yeah.
I'm going like, okay. Whoever wants to, you know, a lot of people I know, it's not their names. So I use their pen name because otherwise I'm totally, especially when they're on a show and we're talking, you know. so I don't do that anymore.
Have you published under a pseudonym then, Marcia? Did
I
you
did
say?
For a minute. I did for a minute and took it away. It was Madison Montgomery, uh-huh. but then I thought I found out that there was like 500 million Madison Montgomerys. And I'm like, oh, why do I pick this name? So then I went back to my name only because I you know, people would be talking about it and like I wouldn't be there, and it was weird. If I weren't on the radio, I think it would be different. So I don't know what I'm going to do, if I'm going to come out with one or not. But a lot of people have them. You know, and it's nothing for a writer to make up a name. I mean, we do this all the time, you know. We all make up names. But, you know, I mean, it's just there's so many different trains of thought of a lot of things. So that's what we try to do on this show is say that you can do a lot of different things.
You know, when you're talking about names, one of the things I do, and what really kind of got me started, I love sort of different names for characters and even, you know, just people who make a sort of a one-page appearance. And I go through the obituaries daily. And I have three electronic files.
I know that. That's
one
a good idea. I know that.
Male
idea.
And female first names and then last names. And one of my favorites, I have a bit character that shows up now and again. She never plays a big part, but her name is Swindle Lawless.
Oh.
And she she's constantly reinventing herself, and it always never goes her way and stuff. But it's just amazing. And I know the UK is the same way, but in the U.S. with so many ethnic names and varieties, I mean, there's no limit to the things you find. And then the nicknames, I mean, they're just fantastic.
I thought of that the other day because I really, you know, I was recently reading an obituary, and I thought, this is really great. And, when my grandmother was in a nursing home, I used to go there, like, every day. And so what was interesting is a lot of the help that works there, they go to the funerals because they they go there because they only know the person when they're older and they may have things wrong with them, and they want to hear when people talk about the things that they did and the successes and how wonderful their life was before, you know, they got ill. So, I mean, because people had a life before. I mean, sometimes when people are, you know, not well, they're not the same. But when you, you know, hear what other people say about them, you learn about them. So it's like a character almost of the person that wasn't there. And, you know, interesting, very. You know, but the obituaries, that is good. And names are hard. I either put them together, and then I do have a big problem if I have to change a name. It really bothers me. I can't. It's hard. I can't change the name. I've tried it, you know, to change a name. And does anybody get that? You get that or no?
I have just the opposite. I'm as the thing develops, I'm thinking, you know, this guy's name or this woman's name, it just isn't working. I have no problem changing it.
Yeah. Because usually when I get the name, then if I change it, like if it's already a story and then I want to change it, it's very hard for me because I feel like I can't, I keep calling them the same name. Even with my screenplays, because, you know, with that genre, you got to keep changing the names of the screenplays or whatever. And, you know, I still always call them the first original name that I had, even in my head. You know, and I keep... Go ahead.
I don't change names either, but in my fourth book in the Gaston series, all of a sudden as I'm proofing it, you know, editing and proofing, the same character who had had one name throughout the whole story, all of a sudden I called him Angus once or twice. I've never known an Angus in my life.
And I have a character Angus in mine. I have a character.
Said, who in the H is Angus? And we were laughing about it. In the fifth book, I did name a character Angus. I figured Angus had to show up.
Yep, I have an Angus in one of my books. I don't even know how. And I know that sometimes I have the, my editor used to always say to me, he'd go like, do you know that you keep using that name Grace or Gracie? I do. I never realized it. It's just I see the person and I see that name. And I guess we all in our minds think of different people in different ways. And, you know, that's how we must have things in our head that make us do things, whatever. I don't know. It does make us different, you know, because my friends, you know, like I think when you're an author, you sometimes think you can change the world because you change your stories, but you can't change the world.
Yeah.
That you create.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah.
But do you find that down the road, I mean, I what was I doing? An interview a while back, and someone asked me a question about a book that, you know, I just put out my I think 14th or something, someone asked me something about a character in book three, and I was just drawing a blank. I said, well, what did you think about that? You know, groveling for any clue she might drop. And, you know, mercifully she did. I think she picked up on the fact that I was blanking out. But
yeah, but, you know, the thing is, we all do that. I mean, because usually when you're finished with a book, I mean, or that's one of the reasons I don't really do book reviews, because I don't want anybody's characters in my head. And so what happens is when you finish something, you're on to the next story, because these people, in my mind, they're like real. I mean, you know, I think we all probably feel something. Yeah. So that's why you wouldn't remember it, because it was like a past, you know, you try not to, so you don't make your characters the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and so I think that's a good thing. But I think that sometimes when you're being interviewed and they're not authors, they don't get it, because they don't know. You know,
they don't know when you're right, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, either that or I am really dense, and they do know that, you know.
I doubt you are. I doubt you are, because, you know, I doubt. You know, and
when you write a series.
Yeah.
I think when you write a series, you even get more attached to the characters.
Yeah.
And I know when I finished my 5-book series, as I typed the last sentence, I sobbed. I cried for a good 20 minutes.
Yeah, I think it is sad sometimes when you do. Right? This is how we are, because I think we do feel when we're writing. Otherwise, we wouldn't be good authors then. I mean, because you have to feel something, because this is like a feeling.
Yes, and the readers will also see it in the way you write if you can't feel it.
Yeah.
You know, they are very discerning in order, you know, to notice, I think there's something wrong here. You know, they find that out.
Yeah, I think, you know,
and
there's so many different...
Well, I went to that chat room where I talked to authors, and I said, am I nuts or what? Because this just happened to me. And I kid you not, in less than 15 minutes, I had pages of responses.
Really?
Of people all saying, no, it happened to me too. No, it's like someone died.
I absolutely could feel that, you know, and sometimes people bring characters back for that reason, you know, and sometimes even when they die, the good thing about being an author is you can bring them back, because you can figure out what happened to them in the meantime. You know, it would be nice if we could bring people back in our lives. That would be a really good thing, you know. But I do think authors, you know, we can do a lot of different things, especially when you're writing fiction, you know. And but historical fiction, like you were saying, it is, you do need research. It's tough, you know, to do that. Mm-hmm. It's a very different market, I think. And people, it's a very hard market. I think it's a very difficult market.
It's very difficult to break into.
Yes, it's very difficult. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
You know, but, you know, I don't think people realize.
I'm not having any problems in crime fiction. It's just a breeze.
Right. Because I can see that you're just talking just like you write.
Yeah.
You do, and that's a good thing. I once bought a book like that, talk like you write like you talk. And I do talk, I think it's a good idea to do that. Because it comes out of you. Yes, you can see that. You know, it's very much a part of you. Not that you're going to be walking around killing people, but, I mean, you can see how easy you read it. It's an easy read because it just flows, because it's coming really right from you. It's just that you can see that you're talking it. Yeah, I think that's a good thing, you know.
Oh, gosh, Mike, you know me. Am I gritty, raw, and dark?
Yes. Your point.
Is that hard for you to do that, or does it just kind of just depend on your character?
You know, I put my hands on the keyboard and I tell the character to tell their story. I don't know what they look like or anything.
Yeah,
me too. I don't care. I really, I know that is true. So I think that, you know, it really is the character. We rely on our characters to tell the story, because, like, I could be sitting in a, you know, movie, and all of a sudden I see something on the screen, and I'm going, like, it doesn't have anything to do with the movie, but it has something to do in my head that I think I need to think about. So then I take my little pad out. My husband is always looking at me, okay, and then I'm writing in the dark, right? So, but if I don't write it at that moment, it's not going to be there. So I have to write it down. And because whatever it is that sparked in my head, you know, that I saw in the movie, I had to write down, because it's nothing to do with the movie. It's what I thought about my story I'm writing. Because that's how we get things. We get it in pieces. It would be nice if it just came. Sometimes people maybe can let it flow, but it comes, to me, it comes in pieces. It doesn't come the same day.
Sometimes when I'm at work, that also happens to me. You know, in the middle of a work day, I just have to write down something because I'm just too scared that it might get lost and I won't have that feeling anymore.
You won't.
So I won't be able
a lot of times
to,
you don't.
Yeah.
It's a moment.
But then
and
do
I write
like,
what I like
problem.
To read, I've found. But I write what I like to read.
Yep.
And so I suppose that's where I get that. If anybody is watching True Detective on HBO.
I am watching that.
Whoever
oh, my God.
The writer of that,
oh, my
is
God.
How I would love to have people say I wrote.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
he
a very, it's, this is a character study of two guys that is unreal. I mean, it is confusing at times, and not everybody's going to like that, but watching these two guys, Matthew McConaughey and
Woody Harrelson.
Woody Harrelson, it is, they are incredible actors.
They are.
It is not
they
over
are.
Here.
Telling you the
not
writing for
Ireland,
that, you know from the opening notes of the song, it's going to be brutal.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's a different form of TV. It's almost like it should have. It was. It's like you. It's like a movie that you would see on the big screen, because it's not like a TV movie that you see. It is a very intense story, but it, you know the characters.
It's almost like an indie film.
Yeah,
it's almost
characters.
Like an indie film.
Right, which is what happens sometimes, and you know, well, Woody Harrelson does do small ones like that, and you know, and Matthew has been doing that now too, which he didn't do, I don't think, in the past, you know. I mean, it's very, you know, movies and books, it's, you know, I do love movies. I can't lie. I love them. I love the big screen, and I just love to see them. You know, and there have been some good ones this year, and there's been some movies that are not that great. You know, actually, Virginia and Bennett are going to be doing a show on, I think it's the Wednesday after the Academy Awards to talk about, you know, some of that and talk about the truth in movies and based on fiction and, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things that, there's so many questions out there, you know, and I don't know if anybody saw, there was a documentary kind of that Alec Baldwin did on getting funding and what, for movies. It was good.
Oh, no.
It was real. It was good because they were, no matter who you are, they're going like, oh, well, I don't know if they're box office material. It's very tough to get a movie made.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Not easy.
Well, yeah.
I'm wondering if any of you saw Kill Your Darlings. That was a movie about the beat writer, so it's right up any author's alley. And that was an indie film, and it was one of the best ones, I think, this
what's
year.
It called? What's it called?
Kill Your Darlings.
I think I saw that. Is it on cable at all?
And
Kill
it's
Your
about
Darlings.
William Burroughs and the guy that wrote On the Road and all the... You know, I'm in my 50s, my memory. The guy who wrote the beat poetry, Howell, he wrote
okay,
Howell.
So this is Kill Your Darling, okay.
It's based on the story, it's a true story of the people who were the beat authors back then, Jack Kerouac. Lucien Carr was the one who got them all together, and he kills this guy. And you know that in the beginning. And the whole story is about the build-up to that and what
well,
really
right.
happened.
Well, that's what murder
and in
mystery,
real life,
yeah.
he did kill the guy.
He did.
So it was just fascinating.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
See, you know, and those are the things, you know, that, you know, when you write horror or you write, some of the horror is deep, dark fiction. Okay, it's not exactly horror. I don't even know, you know, what you were saying before, horror is people slashing, that's different. Than a horror film. You know, it is, and that's what the genre, you know, it's a very tough genre to say you like or you don't like because sometimes it's too intense. Sometimes you just can't watch it. I mean, there have been some I can't watch. I mean, sometimes I go like, I can't even watch it. And I used to be a lab tech. Blood is nothing, to, you know, when I used to see it. But it's the way they do these things. It's who wants to watch that, you know. And it does become intense. You know, so, I mean, there's so many different forms of writing now. So listen, there's an audience for everything. So that's, you know, you can't feel bad if somebody doesn't, because you never know if somebody's going to pick up that book one day and say, I want to make that a movie. I truly believe that because it's true.
Yeah.
You know,
I used to be a big Stephen King fan because he wrote psychological horror.
Yes.
And then he started going for the gross out, and I quit reading him.
But he does do psychological. I mean, he does things that nobody else does. I mean, it's
does
that's
he
how
still?
I think he does. Yes, I think he does.
I need to look at some of his newer stuff because I quit after Misery because it seemed like he was going
He's done some very interesting things after that. Yeah, he's done movie series. I mean TV series. Yeah, Mike, have you thought of screenplays with yours?
Only briefly, and the reason I haven't thought much further is that it's at least in my way of thinking, a completely different process, and I view it as even more dreadfully competitive.
It is hard. I mean, I've been optioned several times, but that doesn't mean you made the movie.
Yeah.
You get the movie made, and even somebody has paid me some, you know, to do one, but you never know because they really, you know, you could have a movie made 10 years later. In books,
mm-hmm.
you need is someone to just find your book, and that's one of the things, is that you never know if somebody is going to find the book and go, you know what, I really want to do this.
Very similar to the movie 12 Years as a Slave, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
Somebody found it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's a good thing.
If I was going to turn one of my books into a movie, I mean write a screenplay, I'd rather write another book, to be honest.
Right.
And it would probably be less work.
Well, it is hard.
For me,
I learned how to edit myself out.
But that is
a problem in my writing because in my writing, I edit myself out too much because I've done screenplays. You know, because when you do a screenplay, you go like, all right, you're at the doctor, let's say, you're in the hospital, whatever, it's morning, that's it. And then you write whatever they're saying. But for me, so I have trouble adding on. Which Sable has, and I think it's really good that she explained that to me, and, you know, and she says, add more, and she's right, because I stop myself, you know, you just get used to doing it. I mean, I did 12 screenplays, so I was just writing a certain way, but when you write a book, you have to be more descriptive. People want to know. I'm thinking people are going to see it, but then they're not when they're reading it. So it's different. It's very difficult, you know. But it's fun, though. You might like it. You might enjoy it. It is fun. I do love it. But see, my problem is I'm not even having time to do that because I'm like, I need an AA for Facebook and social media to, like, stop.
Well,
you know,
and
I'm always
you mentioned
posting.
Time. And the time factor is just, I mean, it's so... So tight. I mean, I'm over here in Dublin right now, and I just a blurb in for my gracious wife who puts up with me waking up in the morning and being glued to the keyboard until the evening. But when I start tapping keys at, call it 8 in the morning here, it's only 2 a.m. in the U.S., so I really have a good 6 hours before anything is starting to stir. In the U.S. as far as social media and stuff and having to post, offers or promos or whatever. So I can really get a full day of work in, actually probably a day and a half for every day.
That's what I do as well, Mike. Yeah, here I also do that, but I can only do it during the weekends because I work during the week. So.
Yep.
So my solution is to move somewhere and change the hours. That would be my solution.
And I'm not faced with the difficulty that so many talented people have. I don't have little people at home who need, you know, breakfast or dinner made or being taken to dance or hockey practice.
Well,
I don't have that anymore. I did my time and I love my kids and everything, but, boy, if you're faced with that, I mean, you're down to maybe
it's
just
hard.
Minutes.
Oh, I don't know how... Yeah, because I did a lot of my stuff.
I babysit 4 or 5 days a week, 5 hours a day or so, a 2.5-year-old.
I'll tell you what,
I wouldn't give up that time in the world. And, it is time away from my books, but I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And that's really what it is. You have to make that choice. Right.
Yeah.
But it is hard, especially when I know that people have 3 children and they're taking them, to a lot of different activities. It's impossible. You know, I wrote a lot of my things, my screenplays, when my son was younger, and then I rewrote a lot of things, after that. But when he got older, no, I didn't have that problem to do that. But you do, there's other things, doing the shows and everything, it takes a lot of time, but I love it, and I've met so many great people. But I know I have to do a limit, and I had a show a few weeks ago about being overwhelmed by social media because actually it doesn't work like people want it to work, and I think some people are realizing that now. So I think it's it might get better for some because I think mm-hmm. that people just they're not missing anything if you're not out there doing it. You know, because it's not really helping that much. It doesn't help that much. You should do some, but not, you know, but because I have shows and other people doing shows under our network, so I'm trying to post everybody's, you know, and keep doing it. But I think, you know, there has to be some common denominator where you just say, forget it. You know, I say that,
well,
but
I think, too, it's because so many authors don't post anything except stuff about their books and their events.
Yeah.
And so they don't make friends with any of the people they've connected with, and
right.
people get tired of just seeing some events.
Well, I see it all day long. Buy. Buy me. That's
yeah.
all day long, you know. And
yeah.
I don't know if they're selling or not. I can't do that. It's not. It's hard for me to do that, you know. So, you know, but listen, I mean, this is how people sell books, and, you know, they want their numbers up. Which is another story. We could do that at another time. But before we, you know, kind of sign off, because you have your party soon, but I want everybody to say their websites. And it's been fun. I enjoyed all of you here. This was a great show.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I enjoyed
Thanks
as well.
Thanks for having us, Marcia.
It's fun. Oh, this
yeah.
is fun.
I really appreciate it, Marcia.
I'm a bit, listen, if you have something you want to come on a show, just let me know. If you see some show that I'm having that you might want to come, just call me. It's okay. I've been known to have 8 or 10 people on my shows at one time because,
okay.
I, you know, it's just supposed to be fun and we enjoy this, you know.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, that's what this is supposed to be about. Writing is fun for us.
Yep.
So I think that that's what gets lost in the shuffle. So I'm trying to just, you know, just try to write more, you know. And,
yeah.
I really am, you know, and it's good if you could sit down and do that. And I used to be able to do that more. But I have to mentally decide to do that. And a lot of people are. They're saying they have – because I think what happened is nobody has business hours anymore. What happens is it's 24 hours a day. Everybody thinks that. Everybody's available all day long.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody shouldn't probably be available all day long because I have a problem. Sometimes I'm up at 2 and I see people that have already been, you know, that – like let's say you've already slept and but – there's people up at 2 or 3 that haven't gone to bed yet. We're still out there. You know, nighttime is a great time to write, though, I think. There's nobody bothering you. You know?
Yeah.
But it's what we do to ourselves, I think, you know. So I'm working on that, but we'll see how that goes for me. I don't know. I'll let you know how that goes. All right. Okay, and if you everybody's going to give their thing, their websites, but you can always reach me at Michigan Avenue Media. .com or MarciaCasperCook.com, and I'm always available for an email, or you can call me at my office. So, you know, if you have something you want to be on the show, just let me know. Okay, go ahead, Mike.
My name is Mike Farisee, and that's Farisy, and email is MikeFariseeAuthor@gmail. I'm on Facebook at Mike Farisee Books, and Dev Haskell, Haskell, my main character in my series, and on Amazon.
Should we have Dev on? Maybe we should have Dev on the show.
Oh,
I think
that
we
would
should.
Be great. Yes. Yeah.
We did that for Halloween. My character Virginia was out there. We had some people came as their character. I'll think of you next year for Halloween. That we'll do that. Okay.
All right. Yeah, you got a deal. You got a deal. Yeah. And on Amazon at Mike Farisee. So.
Okay. Katie?
My name is spelled C-A-D-D-Y, like a golf caddy. My last name is Rowland, R-O-W-L-A-N-D. My author email is cattyrowland@yahoo.com. My blog is www.cattyrowlandblog@blogspot.com. And my author page on Facebook is... Facebook.com/AuthorCattyRowland, and Gaston Beauchamp has his own Facebook page too.
Oh, all right. I got a Halloween show coming up. Really good.
But I won't go into the spelling of his old name. They'll find it.
That's okay. If you give it to me anyway, I'll probably spell it wrong. That's why I do need editing all the time. I will spell it wrong. I did pretty good today, though. I didn't. Go ahead, Isabel.
Yeah, my name is Isabel. It's spelled I-S-O-B-E-L-L-E, Kate, C-A-T-E. My Facebook page is Author Isabel Kate. I have a Twitter handle. It's Isabel_Kate. And my email address is isabelkate@gmail.com. And my website is isabelkate.bokuellc.com. You can reach me there as well.
Yes, and you can find everybody here on Boku. You know, Boku will be Boku LLC. But I think you can find Boku just on Facebook.
Yes, Boku LLC. Yeah.
And we'll be having several Boku authors on in 2 weeks, and then in the third week, I think we're going to have different ones on. So that's going to be good. Periodically, there'll be a lot of Boku. And I meant what I said. If anybody wants to come on a show, just let me know. Fine with me.
We'll do.
All right. Okay. And thank you all. And have a good party. Should I come to this
thank
party?
You.
I think
you
I should come
much.
To this party.
Thank you, Marsh.
Please come and win books and gift cards.
Okay. Okay. All right. All right. So everyone. So that's a plan. There's more people going to be coming to your party. All right. Thank you all. And thank you all. This has been a very lively fun show. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
We should say knock wood that everybody's
bye,
a call
Patty,
safe.
Bye, Mike.
Goodbye and all
bye,
the calls.
Isabel. Thank
bye,
you.
Bye, Marsha.
See you, Caddy.
Okay. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you all.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Right. Good night.